Welcome back to the Chaos Ball Podcast preview season divisional previews. We roll on. We are over the hill. We're over halfway done with the divisional previews. We're getting into the thick of spring training, which I don't care too much for. But what I'm focused on is not spring training. I'm focused on today, at least, the NL Central. Which, I mean, I'll get into it in this episode, obviously. It could be really fun. It could be a really fun division. I thought it was fun last year. Middle of the year last year, when the Reds were kind of surging as the Cardinals were heading towards the basement, and the other teams were interesting too. But I was like, this is a super fun division. Oftentimes, the worst things in the sports are the most fun. And a division like this, where the teams aren't super, like, all of these teams I could see finishing within like 10 games of each other this year, like 1 through 5, and the projections kind of think so too. The projections are very similar to that. They think these teams, this division as a whole, not very good. It's fine, but there's each team offers something super interesting. There's a lot of young players in this division that I'll be looking forward to watching. Like, this is a home of some pretty solid farm systems at the moment. A lot of potential NL rookies of the year. Some interesting sophomore seasons going on here. I think this division's going to be an absolute knife fight I don't know. It's going to be a knife fight. All these teams are hungry. They're hungry to prove something. And I'll just get into it with our first team projected for last place, the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now, this is not surprising that they're projected for last place. I am probably going to pick them to get last place. But last year, honestly, not a bad team last year. They went 76 and 86. Like, that's not great. That's not good. It's not terrible. Definitely some luck involved there, and their Pythagorean reflects that. They went 71 and 91 in their Pythagorean. If you remember, they were like one of the best teams in baseball for the first month and a half. They were raking. Jack Swinski was the NL MVP through a month of the season, damn near. And then they kind of came back to earth. I don't think they were super good. But again, they weren't that bad. And it's important to remind everyone, they got fourth. The Cardinals got last in this division, so I think the Pirates should hang the banner. Not that they got fourth, but that the Cardinals got last year, because that's just kind of hilarious that happened. Felt pretty surreal, but I'll get into the Cardinals later. The Pirates, what do they offer this year? Honestly, I don't see a lot of good things for them this year. They have some interesting players. They have a decent amount of upside, for sure, but I just don't really see them this year being good. I like, this is kind of the year you're hoping to see a lot of progression from these young guys, like O'Neill Cruz, Cabrian Hayes, like, I guess Jack Swinski to a certain degree, but like Leove Piguero at second base, and then like Luis Ortiz in the rotation, you hoping to have him improve. And then you have, like, Quinn Priester, who is projected to pitch a decent amount for them this year, who's their best pitching prospect. Looking forward to watching him when he makes it up. But I don't know. I just don't really think this team is going to be super good. I don't think it's terrible. But and Pecota doesn't like them as much as Fangraphs. Pecota has them going 73 and 89, just about. Fangraphs has them at 78 and 84, so closer to 500 from Fangraphs with 18% playoff odds, I think, just because they play in a not very good division. But enough dilly-dallying on my part. What does Fangraphs think their opening day lineup is going to look like? In the leadoff spot, O'Neill Cruz at shortstop, Brian Reynolds behind him in left field, Cabrian Hayes batting third at third base, Andrew McCutchen DHing, Jack Sawinski in center field, Henry Davis at catcher, Rowdy Tellez at first base, Edward Olivares is that even how you say his name? In right field, and Leover Peguero. Is that how you say his name too? Man, they have some tricky ones on here. At second base, rounding out the lineup. And the first three bats in this lineup here, O'Neill Cruz, Brian Reynolds, and Cabrian Hayes, are very interesting to me. I think Brian Reynolds is just kind of a very solid all-around player. They extended him. I think he's, I'm not going to say Brandon Nimmo to a lesser extent, but just like kind of similar, and just he just kind of does everything pretty well. And he's going to be fine, like, defensively in the corners. I don't think his defense is great, but it's a corner outfield spot. His offense took a little bit of a dip last year, but I'm not like super worried about that. I think a lot of his numbers look similar to the year before. I feel like he just got a little bit of he just didn't spray the ball around quite as much, and walked slightly less, but also didn't really strike out that much either. So I think Brian Reynolds, perfectly serviceable player. As your best player on a team, unsure. Unsure if I'm confident with him being the best player on your team, but I think he's a very good player. Cabrian Hayes. I really like Cabrian Hayes. I think he showed last season that maybe he's taking a step offensively. He had a fine offensive season last year for a guy who's going to give you the floor of one of the best defensive third basemen in the league. Watching him play third base is like watching poetry. It is. I think he's cemented himself as honestly the best third baseman, defensive third baseman in the league, the past couple years. And it's really just been about getting his bat to at least league average. And last season, he did. He was essentially a league average hitter over 124 games, which is a success. And it's one of my big questions for this team this year is, can he take another step? Can he be 10% better than average at the plate this season? And I think he could. I think he cut his strikeout rate a little bit last year. He showed a lot more power, I think, is where I think he sacrificed some walks for some more power, which is fine. Like, he slugged almost 100 points more than 2022 last season, 2023. 3.2 F4 season last year. He's projected for 2.7 this year, which would be tied for Brian Reynolds to lead on the team. And that is just, I think I believe in Cabrian Hayes in the year 2024, to at least maybe league average to 5 to 10% better than league average at the plate. I think that'd be really good for him, and that would be a really valuable player moving forward, paired with his elite defense at third base. And then the X factor for this team is O'Neill Cruz, man. I mean, who else could it be? I think the projections this year for him are pretty healthy, like just a pretty good, solid player. I don't know what the projections think about his defense. I don't know if his defense was particularly good in like 2022 when we saw him play more games when he was a rookie, and he didn't really play like at all really last year. He played like a week of baseball and then was out for the whole year. So, I mean, he's freaking huge, elite raw power. Like, he's hit the ball like hard since he came up in 2022. I think he has the hardest hit ball in baseball. I'm pretty sure. And I think there's reason to believe that he will come up this year and, given a full-ish healthy season, I think he's a 25 to 30 homer guy with like a 40 homer ceiling potentially. Maybe not this year, but in the coming years, I think he's the X factor because there was so much prospect hype around him. He is kind of, since he's not played very much, like not really at all last year, I think there's been some cooling on him, but he's the X factor because there's upside here of him putting up a 30 home run, 20 stolen base season with fine defense at shortstop, which would give you like a 4-win, 5-win player. And that would really do wonders for this team and this offense, because the rest of it is, Andrew McCutchen in 2024, I'm not super confident in. I think he still can get on base pretty well, surprisingly fast for his age, but I don't know. I don't like projecting an older guy like that too much. Jack Sawinski, I like Jack Sawinski. Just can really put a charge in a ball. I don't know if he'll really repeat the year he had last year. Rowdy Tellez, sure, he'll sock some dingers. The last two guys in the lineup, Leove Peguero and Edward Olivares, I'm not super confident in them being good hitters. Leove Peguero, you'd hope, is going to be his rookie year. You'd hope he looks okay at the plate. And then Henry Davis, a catcher. Offensively, I think there's a lot of upside here. Elite power, like raw power offensively. I don't think catcher is his home. It sucks because Andy Rodriguez, another one of their top prospects who is a catcher, got surgery on his UCL, I think, a couple months ago. So he's going to miss the whole year. And I think if he was healthy, I think Andrew McCutchen would be on the bench. Henry Davis would be DHing or playing first base over Rowdy Tellez. And Andy Rodriguez would be catching because I don't think Henry Davis's defense grades out super well. And Andy's does. And Henry Davis offensively, I think, provides some more upside than Andy, at least a little bit differently. He provides, like, Henry Davis, again, elite raw power. I think he's projected to hit like 20 dingers this season. Maybe a little bit less just because of his play time if he was a full-time catcher. But offensively, I like him. Defensively, not so much. So sucks that Andy's out because I really would have liked to see both of them in the lineup together, and we'll likely have to wait until next year. I just don't think this is the year for the lineup. I think you hope to see some progression from these young fellas, and you go into next season. I doubt they'll spend money because they're the Pirates, but you go into next season with another year under the belt of these young hitters. You get Andy Rodriguez back, and I think they could be an interesting team next year offensively. And then just getting into the pitching, they just extended Mitch Keller. Good on them for extending them. Really had a breakout last year for them. Was really good, really solid. He's going to be their ace this year. I don't know if he'd be an ace on contending teams. I think he'd be a very, very good number three, even number two probably on some contending teams. But he will be the Pirates' ace. He's just steadily improved for the past couple of years. You look at his numbers from like 20, I'm not going to go 2020, past 3 years, he's gone from a 6.17 ERA to a 3.91 to last year 4.21, but his peripherals looked a little bit better than that. He pitched a lot more last year, full season, almost 200 innings, striking out almost 10 guys per nine, just had a really good year, and earned his extension with them. And then the rest of this rotation is kind of ugly, man. Martin Perez, Marco Gonzalez, I love Marco Gonzalez. I don't know, man. He was working with Driveline this offseason, so that's interesting. I'm rooting for him. Jared Jones they have at the fifth starter, but I'm assuming their fourth and fifth starters are going to be kind of flexible this year with Rowan C. Contreras, Quinn Priester, Luis Ortiz, Jared Jones. Luis Ortiz, I really like his stuff. Hasn't really panned out so far in Major League Baseball, but he's still only 25 years old. He doesn't have very many big league innings under his belt. Didn't look amazing last year. I do like his stuff, though. He has a really nice sinker and slider. He lost a little bit of velocity last year, though, from his rookie year, which is kind of alarming. I just don't, this pitching staff is not good. And then in the bullpen, they have David Bednar, who's awesome, their closer. Do they trade him this year? He's in arbitration. I don't know what they do with him because he'd be really useful on a contending team in the bullpen. He's real good. And then the rest of his bullpen, like Aroldis Chapman is on this team. Sure. Colin Holderman, Ryan Barucki. It just doesn't do much for me, man. Bailey Falter they signed, or they traded for last year. There's not much. I'm looking forward to watching Quinn Priester, rookie pitcher this year from their pitching staff. I do like Mitch Keller. And then, like, the big what-if this year is Paul Skeens. They just informed him he will be starting the year in AAA this year, which makes sense. I don't think this is, like, service time manipulation. I think if he was ready, they'd probably still do this because it is the Pirates. But I don't really think this particular case is, like, oh, this is terrible. He should be starting at the big league level. He's pitched 6 professional innings. I think it's very okay to start him in the minors. I think it's best for him to start in the minors. And then if he really dominates in like his first few starts in the minors, then I think it's like, okay, maybe he's just that dude and he is a mid-April, late April call-up and he's great. Really looking forward to watching him this year. I think no doubt we'll see him in 2024, but not to start the year, and I don't really think that's a bad decision. So, and that's it for the Pirates. I'm done talking about the Pirates. I don't want to dwell on a team that I don't think is going to be very good this year. But what is their over under? 74.5. Ooh, that's a tough one. I think on paper right now, looking at their projected opening day stuff, I think that is a over 74.5 win team. But then I just look at the depth and the lack of good pitching past their number one starter, and I think I'm going to go under. I think I'm going to go under 74.5 for these Pirates, and I will move on to the projected fourth place team, which, I mean, listen, it depends on what projection you use. The next three teams are all projected to finish within like one win of each other by both of these projection systems. So I kind of just went with the order that I felt like it's kind of going by, the Pocota order. But I will be talking about the Cincinnati Reds, which are, I guess, technically supposed to get fourth in this division. And will they? I don't know. They won 82 games last year. They were briefly in the NL wildcard race. They just one of the more fun teams to watch last year because they had a season that I like to do in video games, in like MLB video games, soccer video games, football, whatever sports video game that I'm playing. I try to just get as many young, high potential players as possible and play them all at the same time, and just hope they all grow into themselves over a year. And then by the like end of season like two, my team's just nasty and they're all like 22 years old. This is the Reds. The Reds were so fun last year. They're chock full of infield prospects. I talked about this team and the Orioles in my season previews last year as having the two best potential future infields in the league, because they both those teams still have tremendous young talent overflowing out of their infield, and they it's not going to change this year for the Reds, and I don't think they were ever going to make the playoffs last year, but they got close. They got really close. 82-80. Their Pythagorean was 77-85. Pocota thinks they'll go 79-83 this year. Fangraphs thinks they'll go 80-82. So middling, you know, around 500. But I really like this Reds team this year. I like this Reds team to make the playoffs this year. Maybe not win this division, but I like them as a team to make the wild card this year. I think they have the pieces to do it. And I think their offseason put a huge part in that. I think they had a really, really solid offseason. I think they addressed the pitching needs going into this year that they kind of needed to do this offseason, bolstered some depth in their bullpen and in their rotation. And they didn't break the bank on any signing, really. They signed just a few, just I think, solid ball players. They didn't go and throw a shit ton of money at Blake Snell or Jordan Montgomery. But they were never going to do that, really. I mean, it's the Reds. If any team can actually cry like broke, it's the Reds. I'm not saying they should, but I think they are literally the poorest owners in the league, which I say that they still have are worth like $500 million, so they're not poor. They could spend more money than this, but like if any team is a little bit more strapped than a lot of other teams in terms of just like cash infusion, it's probably the Reds. That's why they have so many young players, because they're all cheap. But they signed Jaimar Candelario this year, which was super interesting given how many infielders you already have. But, I mean, I like his bat in that ballpark like a lot after the breakout kind of year he had last year. And then on the pitching side, they signed Nick Martinez and Frankie Montas to kind of round out their rotation. And then they signed Emilio Pagan and Brent Suter and Buck Farmer to kind of just round out their bullpen. And those guys are fine. But really, the Montas and Nick Martinez signings, I think, are really solid. I think they just needed those type of pitchers in this rotation after your top couple guys, because Montas is slated at their number 3 and Nick Martinez at their number 5. So, but I'll talk about the pitching in a second. This lineup, according to Fangraphs, projected opening day lineup. In the one spot, TJ Friedl in center field. At the two spot, Matt McClain at second base. The three spot, Spencer Steer in left field. And then Jaimer Candelario at first base. Christian Encarnacion Strand at DH. Ellie De La Cruz at shortstop. Noel V. Marte at third base. Will Benson in right field. And Tyler Stevenson at catcher. And that is a tantalizing lineup. That is, there's not a lot of service time in this lineup, but boy, is it fun. I think TJ Friedl is a perfectly good guy to lead off in this lineup. I don't think he offers a whole lot more than a good contact ability and really fast and can play center field really well. He had a very good year at the plate last year. He doesn't strike out a whole lot and gets on base, steals a lot of bags, especially with the bigger bags, had a really solid year for them last year. I think a really good guy to set the table for this offense. And then Matt McClain. Matt McClain was their best rookie last year. Matt McClain had a really, really good season. I think for a lot of casual fans, probably it was a little lost in the Ellie De La Cruz haze, because while Ellie De La Cruz didn't have as good of a year as Matt McClain did, Ellie De La Cruz was you know, stealing second, third, and home, and hitting balls 118 miles an hour and running 30 bajillion miles an hour on the base path for triples all the time. But Matt McClain had a 128 WRC plus in 89 games last year, 3.2 F4 in 89 games. Looked solid defensively at second base. Looked just like a really well-rounded hitter. Again, we'll probably play up in that ballpark just because everyone hits better in that ballpark. It's Coors and then Great American right behind it for park factor for hitting. But that, it's not anything to slouch at. Those numbers, those are really good for a rookie. And I really like the makeup of his game, and I think he's going to have a really good year. And then Spencer Steer, another just young Reds hitter who last year put together a very solid year at the plate. And kind of offers a lot of positions. He played like every position last year. He played first, third, left field, second base. He DH. He played right field. I think he came up as like a corner infield guy, but I think he'll play where he's necessitated. That's part of why I also really like this team. I think this team is very positionally diverse. I think a lot of guys can play a lot of different positions. And Spencer Steer is a part of that. I think he offers good enough power and a good enough hit tool and can play a lot of positions to be just a really solid player moving forward. I don't know defensively how good he grades out. I don't think he's like an amazing defender in outfield. Like, I think his best spot would likely be first base just to limit the defense. But I don't, with the signing of Jaimer Candelario, the next guy in this lineup who is slotted to play first, I don't know how much Spencer Steer will play there. Candelario, I think, will just be a really solid veteran presence in this lineup. I think they kind of needed that. I don't think, as good as your young guys can get, I do still think you need veterans in a clubhouse, in a lineup, and Candelario will offer that. He had a really good year last year at the plate, got moved at the deadline, and then the Reds signed him, and just is a solid all-around hitter. I mean, there's not much else to say. He offers some power, will be bolstered in that ballpark. Good bat-to-ball skills. Can play first base, third base. He'll DH too, probably a little bit. Good player. Ellie De La Cruz, you know, I'll save him for last. Tyler Stevenson at catcher. I don't know. At one point, I really thought he was going to be a great, great catcher. I just don't see it anymore. Will Benson in right field, another young fella who has a very fun swing and offers a limited defensive corner outfield with insane raw power from the left side of the plate. Very fun to watch when he gets into one. And then Christian Encarnacion Strand and Noel V. Marte, again, part of the guys who came up last year as rookies. Noel V. Marte, of course, coming from the Mariners system over from the Luis Castillo deal. I think he's going to be really good. I've heard nothing but good things. I think third base is perfect for him. I don't think he has the range really for shortstop, but I think he has the arm for third base, and I think he has more power in his game than most people think he does, and just looks like a guy who will be a force at the back half of this lineup, which is very, very good. Like, if you can have a hitter that's good enough like that at the back half of the lineup, that's solid. Christian Encarnacion Strand, not too different from Noivy Marte. I think there's a lot more projectable power here, and like raw power and what he showed last year, he can really, really hit a dinger. He can also kind of play first base, third base, outfield. They have a lot of those guys. He didn't really play outfield in the minors. They last year, in the middle of last year, I remember they were like, oh, we should start playing him there because I don't know if he's going to fit in the infield. But it's good. He can play a lot of positions too. So they have him DHing. I think that's fair, but I think there will be a lot of shifting around with this lineup because then you also have Jonathan India on the bench, which I still think he might be traded. But he can also play a lot of different positions, mainly second base, but he can play in the corner outfields. Had not the year you'd want to see from him last year after a very promising start at the career. His past couple years have just been mediocre, not exactly what you want to see. But I think there's reason to believe he's going to have a better year at the plate this year, and I think he could easily be traded to a team that might need some Jonathan India on the team. And then pitching-wise, my X factor for this team this year is Hunter Green. The stuff is there. I mean, you've seen the stuff. He averages like 101 miles an hour in his fastball. I don't think that's true, but it seems like it sometimes. The performance on the field has been okay for a young pitcher. He's pitched about half a season in the past 2 years. Or he's pitched like one full season in the past 2 years, I should say. The strikeout numbers are crazy. The stuff is crazy. I just kind of need him to stay healthy and pitch a full year. I think there's reason to believe that he's going to be a really good pitcher. I just need command-wise, I think he needs to get a little bit better command because he does leave some pitches in the middle of the zone. He gave up a lot of home runs the past couple years. But he's also pitching in that ballpark, which doesn't help. I think he's the X factor because if he like just propels into stardom this year, that would be massive for this team to have like a true ace at the top of this rotation. Because after it, I think you have solid pitchers who are not anything special. Graham Ashcraft, fine. Frankie Montas, I really like Frankie Montas. In this ballpark, not especially, but I think he's going to be like a league average 2-WAR pitcher. Same with Nick Martinez. I can see Nick Martinez being a 130-inning, 4.3 ERA pitcher this year, which is fine. And then Andrew Abbott, who is one of their young pitchers. They don't have like that many of these guys, but he's one of them. He has really nice stuff. I like his curveball is really good. It's really nasty. Really looked solid last year in about half a season of play. I think he'll build on that this year. And I like him more than the projections are saying. The projections are giving him more of a league average stat line this year. I think his pitch mix of like slider, fastball, cutter, changeup, I think he could have like three good pitches. Not cutter, curveball. Like three good pitches and then a really good curveball. Like ceiling wise on him. I don't know if he's ever going to be an ace, but I think he's like could blossom into their number three starter pretty easily. And then the kind of wild card here for this team is Nick Lodolo. He had a stretch reaction in his leg last year, really limited what he could do. And then he basically missed like the last half of the, he missed most of the year, really. I liked him when he was pitching. I elite slider. I think last year I thought it was going to be him and Hunter Green really holding it down at the top of the rotation. Then he just didn't end up pitching very much. So hopefully he might be back by opening day. I don't think they even know. He's been like seeing specialists for his leg. So I don't know if even they know he's going to be back. I think he'll definitely pitch this year. I don't know exactly what to expect. I don't know how the injury is going to affect him either. So, and then getting into the bullpen, not a lot of names on here that I want to throw at you that are super important. I don't think the bullpen's going to be great. except for potentially Emilio Pagan, who they signed this offseason, and then Alexis Diaz. Alexis Diaz being the younger brother of Edwin Diaz. And you can kind of see it in how he pitches, but I think he's going to be a really good pitcher. He had a really good year last year in the closer spot for them. He saved almost 40 games for them last year, like a huge reason why they almost made the playoffs. Really interesting pitch mix compared to his brother, because they both throw fastball, slider, like 50-50 almost. Arm slot a little similar, but less velocity. He only averages like 95 on his fastball, but the shape of the fastball is what's important there. It's kind of low arm slot, a lot of ride, really funky to a hitter, and that's why it works. It's not like elite 100 mile an hour fastball like his brother, but the shape of the fastball is really good, and that's why what makes him a really good pitcher. Think like if you're just a Mariners fan listening to this, think Brian Wu, kind of, and I have a lot to talk about in my Mariners preview about Brian Wu, but the low release point, like rising fastball, I love that shape of pitch, and it's been proven to work a lot, and that's kind of what Alexis Diaz offers you with a nice slider as well. So a good closer for this team. I think that's key. And that is the team. I like this Reds team. I do. I think I'm just a sucker for young teams, but like, I can only see their offense being just as good, if not better, than last year. And last year's was fun and really good. And I think their pitching is going to be better than last year. I think the floor of the pitching staff is better than last year's. I don't necessarily think it's going to be a great staff, but I think the floor is there. And, like, especially, like, depth-wise on the offense, signing Candelario, I think, was really huge, because it leaves, like, yeah, Jonathan India on the bench and, like, Jake Fraley, who's fine, also on the bench. I don't think they have too many other prospects, like, ready to super impact this team. I mean, we saw, like, Connor Phillips pitch last year. He's interesting. Like Rhett Lauder potentially could come up with this team this year. I don't know about the depth at the pitching, but at the end of the day, in that ballpark, you're just trying to score more runs than the other team. And I think the Reds can do that. And I like this team. I like this team to sneak into the wild card this year. I really do. And their over under, according to DraftKings, is 82.5. You foul people. Oh man, that sucks. 82.5. That's brutal. I'm gonna go over. I was just so optimistic. I feel like I have to go over. I think if they're gonna make the playoffs, they're gonna have to go over 82.5, and I think they're going to make the playoffs, and so over 82.5 for the Cincinnati Reds, and we will move on to the next team on the list, the Milwaukee Brewers. The NL Central 2023 division winners, Milwaukee Brewers. They went 92-70 last year. They're Pythagorean, 90-72, and they have much more modest projections this year. They are, again, like I said earlier, they're projected to be around one win of both the Cubs and the Reds for the middle of this division. Pakoda thinks they are going around 80 and 82, Fangraphs 81-81. So, you know, you can see what the vibes are here. And I see why. I think this offense is going to be good. I think the bullpen is going to be good. I think there are huge question marks for this starting rotation. But just to start with the lineup, top down, it's Christian Yelich at DH, William Contreras at catcher, Sal Frelick in right field, Rhys Hoskins at first base, Willy Adames at shortstop, Garrett Mitchell in left field, Jackson Churio in center field, Bryce Terang at second base, and Joey Ortiz at third base. Now, Christian Yelich leading off. I really like Christian Yelich, and I feel like he doesn't get enough credit for him just being a really good player over the majority of his career. I think most of what you hear about Christian Yelich is, oh, wow, he really fell off after his MVP years. It's like he has been a pretty productive player since then. And even before then, with the Marlins, he was really good. And then he had two, like, insanely good seasons in the juice ball era. And then since then, now, he hasn't been amazing, but he's been pretty solid the past 2 years. Last year, he had a really good year, his best year since 2019. And the best thing about him I like is just he walks a lot. He walks a lot. And he's, like, power. The power is okay. It's not the juice ball air power that we saw from him, the 40 home runs. But I think he 15 and 20 home runs. I think he's going to score a lot of runs. His defense has really taken a dip as he's gotten older in the corners. But that's, I think, at DH is perfect for him. And I just really like him at the top of the lineup because he's just shown how adept he is at getting on base. And I think that's really valuable. And then right after him, William Contreras. Love William Contreras. Big fan. Just an absolute boon for the Brewers to just get weasel their way into that Braves and A's Sean Murphy trade and be like, oh, we'll take William Contreras. And they did. And his offensive makeup was not something I think they were going to, like, completely change. I think he came over to them as like, oh, this guy is great offensively, really polished offensively for such a young catcher. And he showed that in the season before he got traded to the Brewers. He had a crazy good offensive year for the Braves in 2022. And there was reason to believe, oh, maybe he's not going to repeat that. I mean, he was like a 140 WRC plus player. But what he did do last year is he still put up really good numbers. He played a lot more games is what was key for me. He played a lot more games. His offensive numbers were a little bit worse on a rate basis, but he did strike out less. He hit for less power, however. But the key for William Contreras and what everyone kind of expected is he went to the Brewers, and the Brewers turned him into a really good defensive catcher, which he was not on the Braves. The Brewers can take any catcher in the league and turn them into a great pitch framer. I am very confident in that. That is something that's probably the best. It's that in their pitching development and what they get out of their pitchers, but I honestly think their best trade as an organization is what they've done for catcher defense. And they did that. They've turned William Contreras now into top five catcher in the league, offensively and defensively. He's really good, really solid. Love him. And after that, the lineup gets a little bit shakier. Sal Frelick, sure. I don't know too much about what he's going to do offensively. He had some really highlight plays in the outfield last year after he came up for his little cup of coffee at the end of last year. I think he's just kind of a hit, toolsy, fast, defensively good outfielder. And then Rhys Hoskins in the four spot. I loved this signing for them. I feel like this is exactly what they needed. I don't know if anyone knows what Rhys is going to be post-injury. He hasn't played baseball in quite a long time. But if he's anything like what he was prior to the injury and just an absolute force offensively, you can hit the ball really hard and really far. I think that's going to be super valuable for this Brewers team. After him, Willy Adames. I think Willy Adames is just a very stable, solid shortstop option for them right now. He's been really good defensively. Took a dip offensively last year, but he raised his walk rate. He just hit for some less power, so I'm not super alarmed, and I feel like he might have at least bounced back to league average to a little bit above league average at the plate. Defensively, I think he's fine. He's good defensively at shortstop. And then Garrett Mitchell, another young player in the outfield. Bryce Terang, another guy who came up last year. He'll play second base. Joey Ortiz, who was one of the players they got along with Dale Hall back from the Corbin Burns trade with the Orioles. Joey Ortiz did not have a spot in that organization. I don't know if his bat is supposed to be super good at the big league level. I think ceiling-wise, like, his bat, I think, is just a higher average hitter. I don't think he has much power. I think he's hopefully looking at, like, a higher, closer to 300 average ceiling with getting on base at a fine clip, but his best trait is his defense. They have him at third base because I don't think they're going to start him over Willy Adames at short. If Joey Ortiz is really good at the plate, they'd look to move Willy Adames in the middle of the season. Because Joey Ortiz, everything I've heard about him is he was the best defensive shortstop in that Orioles system. So there's that. And then they also signed Gary Sanchez. I also thought this was a perfect signing for them last year. Gary Sanchez, or this offseason, Gary Sanchez had a crazy good year last year after no one really signed him for a while, and then he went to the Padres last year, and he was a man alive for the Padres. I mean, he even this over the full season with two teams last year, he had 19 home runs in 75 games. Like, that's crazy. That's like Pete Gary Sanchez home run hitting. And that was back in the juice ball era. So I think as a backup catcher, if they can just turn him into a really good pitch framer and he hits 15 home runs for them playing 80 games, that's a huge success as a backup catcher to Contreras. And so this lineup's interesting. I think it's pretty well balanced, honestly. I think they have a good mix of power hitting and on-base potential with a decent amount of speed in like Sal Frelick. Christian Yelich can still steal bases pretty well. And like Jackson Chourio and Joey Ortiz fast. And then, yeah, Jackson Chourio. I didn't even talk about him. Jackson Chourio, not the number one prospect in baseball, I think, just behind Jackson Holliday, but a consensus like top three prospect in the game. And he got the biggest contract for a player who hasn't played in the major leagues yet. I think he profiles as a true five tool center fielder. Looks like he's marched through the minors with really good numbers. I think there's very good reason to believe he's going to put up a solid year this year. I don't know if he's going to light the world on fire in his rookie year. Maybe he will. But I think he's definitely going to be on that short list of rookie of the year for the National League for good reason. I think he's going to be a really good player for them for a long time. And he offers that like key what if upside. Like if he hits the ground running in the major leagues and puts up a 3-4 WAR rookie of the year season, that I think would take this team to be a favorite to win this division again, to be honest. I think there's just an air of unknown with him still being a prospect, and he's like 19. So that's the offense. It's an interesting offense. I like it. It's well-balanced. And then let's get to this pitching staff. And, boy, it's not great, especially with Corbin Burns gone. My X factor for this team this year is Freddy Peralta, their ace. I think he can be actually true ace. I think he's been one of the more underrated pitchers in the league the past like 3-4 years. He's been really good. He has battled some injuries, but he put up what amounts to almost a full season of innings last year. His velocity was up. He looked really good. His stats were really good. He's striking out a lot of guys. I think he can be the true ace. And I think that is what he's going to have to be. I think he's going to have to be one of the best pitchers in the National League for this team to really compete next year, especially with Corbin Burns gone. Because then after him, it's Wade Miley, Jacob Junis, Colin Rea, DL Hall, the other guy they got back from the Orioles, who they're going to try to start. He's been relieving for the Orioles, but I think he can be a starter, a good one, unsure. I think he can at least probably be better for you than maybe Colin Rea or Jacob Junis. I think there's upside for sure. And if he's not good, you stick him back in the bullpen. And then something to watch for this rotation is Brandon Woodruff had shoulder surgery last year. I don't exactly know when he's going to come back, but I think he has potential to come back this next year. Let me look at the Fangraphs depth chart real quick just to see what they have him projected at, if anything, for this year, because he had shoulder surgery and they just extended him. So it looks like Fangraphs Zips is projecting him to throw 119 innings in 2024. That is crazy. Steamer's projecting him for one inning. What is going on? Well, in any case, this rotation I don't think is going to be good. But if they get Woodruff back midway through the year, that would be huge. Because he's been also one of the more underrated pitchers in the league when he's been pitching in the past few years. He's been really good. And then the bread and butter of this pitching staff as a whole I think, is the bullpen. I think the bullpen is going to be good again, like it has been. Devin Williams is full-time closer. I love him. His changeup, the airbender, is my favorite pitch in baseball. Has been for years. It's the sexiest pitch in the league. Joel Piamps was really, really solid for them last year. They got him back from the A's in last offseason. Trevor McGill, I think, is another underrated arm in this Brewers pen. I think he's going to be a solid back of the bullpen reliever for them this year. Hobie Milner is really interesting, very funky. He sounds like he throws exactly like his name sounds. His name's Hobie Milner, and go look up how he pitches. It's like exactly how you picture it. Abner Uribe offers a potential firecracker in this freaking bullpen. The dude has nasty stuff. Another one, if you aren't familiar with Abner Uribe's game, he came up last year as a rookie, pitched 30 innings, averaged 101 miles an hour on his fastball, and it's not a four-seam fastball. It is a sinker, 100 mile an hour sinker with a devastating slider. I think if they like trade Devin Williams, if they're bad this year and trade Devin Williams, I think Abner Uribe is potentially like another really good closer for them. He might step into that role this year. That's something to look out for, is Abner Uribe in this bullpen. But that's about it for their bullpen. I mean, there's a couple of their arms in there, but I think those are the important bullpen pieces. This is a super interesting team, and I don't really know how to feel. On one hand, I want to pick this team to win the division. On another hand, I just can't ignore the pitching staff. I can't ignore the fact that they have one good pitcher in my mind in the rotation right now, and then big question mark about DL Hall, question mark about how much Woodruff innings they'll get this year. But I like the offense, especially with like just throwing Jackson Chourio into this offense and Rhys Hoskins. I like it. I like the offense a lot. I think this team is going to bop, but I don't know. I don't know where to place them, but I'll start off at least by going over their over under here. 77.5. I'm going over. I think that is low, to be honest with you. I think 77.5 is a little low for my liking. So I'm going to go over 77.5 for the Brewers. I like this team. I just don't. This division is going to be impossible to pick 1 through 5 and be correct, because the next two teams as well, I can see all of these teams winning the division, even the Pirates. What if O'Neill Cruz is an 8-win player this year and Paul Skenes comes up and is the best rookie pitcher we've seen since Strasburg? Like, what if that happens? The Pirates could win the division. Who knows? But whatever. That's the Brewers. That's the Brewers. And we will move on to another team projected to be about mediocre, the Chicago Cubs. The Cubs, who've had one of the more interesting off-seasons of the year. The reason why I waited to do this division for so long is because I was just waiting for the Cubs to bring back Bellinger, and they did. And they did. They really did me a favor there, so that was nice of them. But let's get into the actual team. So, the Chicago Cubs. They had a super mediocre year last year. I mean, they went 83-79. They were in that playoff conversation, and they just barely missed out by, I think, one game. So, I mean, they weren't a bad team last year. They got a little unlucky. Their Pythagorean record was 90-72. I think there's a lot to look up look forward to this season. They're projected to go 82-80 by both Percota and Fangraphs with around 40% playoff odds. I see why. I think this team is a little top heavy, especially the pitching side. But they had an important offseason. They brought back Cody Bellinger. It took a little while, but they brought him back. I think that's huge for them. They really needed it. It's not like they could have gone without. They could have gone without him. It would have just been bad. They needed to bring him back, especially because he had such a good year there last year and built up some goodwill with the fans and stuff. So I think that was just important from not only a baseballing perspective, but just like an optics perspective. And then they signed Shota Imanaga, one of the premier Japanese pitchers that was on the market this year, and I really do like Shota Imanaga. The projections don't love him, and I think there could be an adjustment period for sure. I feel like that is kind of what the projections are getting at here, because he's projected to be right around league average-ish, maybe a little bit worse. And the Cubs didn't, like, shell out a bunch of money. I think it was $50 million, like, 4 years, something like that. But he offers something really interesting. He's not a super high velocity pitcher. He's not, like, going to absolutely blow you away, but he's really shifty, and he's got really nice pitch design, and I think he's going to be a really interesting watch. I think the only thing is his weakness last year, the past couple of years in NPB, was the home run ball. And so I think that could really zap him this year, especially in that ballpark. That is like that is the only thing I really worry about. Otherwise, I think if you just watch this guy, it would be like, oh, he's not like a super modern pitcher. You know, he's not a flamethrower, but he has four legit good pitches. And again, really good pitch shape, really good attack, really good command as well. And his fastball is really good. Another one where it's like a very unique, or not necessarily unique, a very interesting arm angle. The ball comes in from kind of a lower slot, some good ride to it, good pitch design on the fastball. So it's again where he's making up for his lack of velocity with pitch movement, and like pitch shape and command. He's kind of the epitome of what the Cubs have been trying to build rotation-wise for years. They weirdly have just built since they won the World Series. They're like, no, we're going back to basics. We're going back to when the Billy Goat curse started. We're going back to dead ball era baseball. And they were like, these pitchers, we're going to have them control the zone. They don't need to throw hard. They just need to have good pitch movement and location. And that hasn't really worked out for them, because Kyle Hendricks' fall off has been tough. But Shota Imanaga looks like the perfect guy for that. So I think plopping him in this rotation is huge for them, because I'm not very confident in the rotation besides that. I'll be honest with you. But let's just look at the lineup first. I don't have as many quorums with the lineup. So top down, it reads Nico Horner at second base, Dansby Swanson at shortstop, Ian Happ in left field, Cody Bellinger at first base, Seiya Suzuki right field, Christopher Morel at third base, Michael Busch at DH, Yan Gomes at catcher, and Mike Tauchman in center field. The guys I'm not really going to talk about is Yan Gomes and Mike Tauchman. I think Tauchman will be a fourth outfielder for them once their top prospect, Pete Crow Armstrong, comes up, because Pete Crow Armstrong, while there's questions about his bat, he is likely going to come up and immediately be potentially the best center fielder in the league defensively right when he debuts. So like last year, they're going to probably have the best defense up the middle in the league. I said that last year with Bellinger in center field, because Nico Horner and Dansby are two of the best at what they do at second base and shortstop. So I think that's part of hopefully what will help the pitching staff, and what definitely helped the pitching staff last year is that defense. I think their defense is going to be good again. And I think this lineup is pretty solid. Like Nico Horner at the top with Dansby, I think those are two guys who are going to get on base pretty well. Ian Happ offers a good amount of pop from both sides of the plate, has been pretty stable in that lineup for a while. Just a good hitter. Not much more to say, just a very solid hitter. And then Cody Bellinger, again, had a really good year last year after bouncing back finally. Similar, I guess, to Yelich, it's been like, oh, since MVP and the juice balls, you fell off. And he finally put together a good season of baseball last year. He was a lot more contact forward, and I think that really helped his numbers and helped him get back on track. So, and his positional versatility of center field and first base, providing good defense at both spots, is very unique. So I really like that about him. I like Seiya Suzuki. He could be poised for like a huge year at the plate this year, because since coming over to the Cubs in 2022, he was good his rookie year at the plate, and he was better last year at the plate. He improved offensively. He walked about the same, a little bit more. He cut the strikeout rate a little bit. hit for a little bit more power. He was just kind of marginally better in every aspect of his game last year, and I think it's healthy to say that he's going to be one of the better right fielders in the National League this year at the plate. Defensively, I don't think it's great, but that's okay. You can stick him in right field. And I think he has like 25, 30 homer upside. I think he can really hit the ball hard. And I think, I don't know if ceiling is much higher than like a three and a half win player, but that's a really good player. If he can be, if he can, like Fangraphs thinks he's going to put up 2.4 WAR. He put up 3.2 last year. That's a really solid player to have. So that rounds out like their top five of the lineup. And then they have very much upside in the next two guys, Christopher Morel and Michael Busch. I really like Christopher Morel. Big fan of Christopher Morel. I don't know. Some players I just watch play and I'm like, that's that dude. And I think Christopher Morel is that dude. He is offers a good amount of speed, super positionally versatile. He played every position for them last year, damn near, like every infield spot. He DH'd a lot. He played in the corner outfield. He can play center if you need him to. And at the plate, I think he hit 26 home runs last year. I think he can hit 30 this year. He only put 107 games, 26 home runs. And so I think he's going to be, given that like they don't really have an out-and-out third baseman right now, he is going to be their full-time third baseman. Defensively, I don't really know what he's going to look like at third base. But offensively, I think he's sick. I think he's going to, if he cuts the strikeout rate at all, like even if he just gets it closer to league average, I think that is a really good hitter. I really like Christopher Morel. And then Michael Busch got back from the Dodgers this offseason for, who did they even trade? I think Jackson Ferris, pitching prospects. Yeah, and Zaire Hope for Yency Almonte and Michael Busch. Pretty big trade. Michael Busch didn't really have a home on that roster at the MLB level for the Dodgers. Really, last year he played about a month of ball. Looked terrible, but I'm not going to take much away from that. I think he offers a guy, again, somewhat positionally versatile. I think he can play third base. He can play second base. He can play first. I don't think he's particularly good at defense in any of those positions, which is why he's a starting DH on this opening day projected lineup. I think he offers a decent amount of pop from the left side of the plate. I don't exactly know what he's going to give him this year. Fangraphs thinks he's going to be around 100-ish WRC plus player this year with like 15 to 20 home runs, decent walk rate. I think a lot of guys who come through that Dodgers system, I really like. They definitely have an emphasis on like a baseline. You should be walking at league average, and his walk rates in the minors were really good. So I think there's a decent floor there of him walking. I think he's probably going to strike out a good amount. But if he can hit like 20 home runs, walk a decent amount, I'm okay with the strikeouts, especially because there's not going to be a whole lot of pressure on him to really perform this year. Because I think the top of the lineup is pretty nice and well balanced. So I do like the lineup. And then let's just get into the pitching. So pitching reads is their ace technically this year going into the year is Justin Steele. And then after that, it's Jameson Taillon, Shota Imanaga, Kyle Hendricks, and Jordan Wicks. Kyle Hendricks in the year 2024, I'll be honest, doesn't do anything for me. I think that's the weakest point in this rotation. Justin Steele, man. I mean, if he didn't have a bad September, he might have won the Cy Young in the NL. He was that good. It's a really interesting pitcher makeup because he's so fastball slider reliant. Like he's two pitcher reliant. Like he has a sinker and a changeup and a curveball that he barely throws. He threw his four seamer and his slider roughly 98% of the time last year. I just don't ever think a young pitcher with relying on two pitches like that is going to pan out super well. Like I always think they should be adding another pitch. But he proved me wrong last year. He really did. He had a 3.06 ERA, 4.9 F4. Again, if he didn't have a pretty subpar month of September, I think he made a very good case for Cy Young. I don't think he's going to be quite as good this year. I think there's regression coming. I feel like he got a little bit lucky last year. The peripherals kind of support his numbers, which is crazy. I just don't buy it. I don't know why. Am I like a Justin Steele truther? Like, I think his slider is really good. I think like what works really well is just the fastball slider working off of each other, and his delivery and his kind of lefty. Another case of an interesting arm slot, like in good tunneling with the fastball and the slider. I just don't know if I really believe in him being an amazing pitcher. Like, I don't know if he's an ace. And that could be really stupid to say, given what a year he had last year, but that's my stance. That's my stance on Justin Steele. And then after that, Jameson Taillon. I just don't think Jameson Taillon is a great pitcher. I think he's perfectly fine. He's been really durable, pretty durable the past couple of years, which helps. I just feel like he's at best a league average pitcher this year. Kyle Hendricks, again, not in 2024, dude. And then Jordan Wicks, one of their other prospects, also from pitches lefty, another guy who doesn't throw super hard, but he has a ton of pitches. It's very much not Justin Steele. Like, he throws he has a really nice changeup. He throws a slider, curveball, fastball. He has a cutter in there too. Pretty good command. Again, very similar to the kind of lower velocity, lots of pitches, good command type of pitcher they have targeted for a while now. I don't know. I think you're just looking for some improvement. He looked like fine when he came up last year. He pitched like a couple. I think he had like five or six starts. Looked okay. I think his changeup is really nice. I think his slider could be really good. I think what definitely helps him is having like four good pitches, five even, that you can throw at a guy or hitting to just keep him off balance. I think that is why he's going to be at least like an okay five starter in my eyes, but I'm not like super confident in his abilities to be a really good pitcher. And then like they have like Ben Brown in the minors, a right-hander, a pitcher for them. I think we could be seeing a decent amount of him this year, either if there's injury or just poor performance. Like, if they finally have to take Kyle Hendricks out to behind the barn and put him down this year, I feel like we're going to see Ben Brown pitch a little bit for them this year. I don't necessarily know how good he is. I think he's a good fastball. I think he's unlike some of the pitchers they've targeted in the past. I think he's very much like good fastball, not a super huge pitch mix like Jordan Wicks. I think he will at least throw in the bullpen for them this year, and I will be intrigued to see what he looks like at the major league level. And then you get into the bullpen, and I really do like Albert Alzolay. I liked him a lot going into last year. Had a really good year. I think he's going to be a solid closing option for them this year. He has electric stuff. He is an absolutely modern closer, very much a slider, sinker, four-seam fastball guy. Throws pretty hard, good movement on that slider. I think he's a really solid option out of the bullpen for them from the closer position. They signed Hector Neris, who I think is just... He's old. I think he could absolutely fall off this year, to be honest with you. But Fangraphs thinks he'll be another pretty solid reliever. Julian Merriweather, Mark Leader Jr., Yency Almonte, Javier Assad. I don't think this bullpen's very good. That's part of the reason I think Ben Brown will probably see a good amount of time in this bullpen, not as much as a starting pitcher. I don't believe in this pitching staff, like, one bit at all. I really don't. And just looking, I need to look at their over and under, because I don't know what to do with this division. I've been like in the back of my mind as I'm speaking, trying to figure out this division, and I simply just cannot. I think that their X factor this season is Shota Imanaga. I think, and I forgot to mention that earlier, I think he's the X factor of this team, because if he hits the ground running and is everything they're expecting, it's going to do wonders for this somewhat lackluster pitching staff. And if he has this year as kind of an adjustment year, I don't think it's the end of the world for him. And I don't think Cubs fans should like pump the brakes and hate him immediately if he starts giving up some home runs and doesn't look amazing. I think there's reason to believe, at least if he has that adjustment period this year, he'll be good next year. I don't know. I think if he is an amazing pitcher, it'll be super helpful. But I think his floor is a below average pitcher, and that would be bad, quite bad for this rotation. So what they should do is sign Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell. If they do that, if they signed one of those guys, I would be much more comfortable picking this team to like win the division. But as it stands right now, I don't think I'm going to pick them to win the division. Their over under is 84.5. I'm going to go under. Just gut reaction. I'm going to go under. I think the offense is fine. I just don't believe in this pitching, man. I think they totally could be a team on the cusp come trade deadline and trade for some relief or starting arms to help, but I just don't. I don't know if I believe in the pitching staff, really. So that is that. And we'll get on to the last team of the NL Central Division, projected to get first place, who got last place last year, surprisingly, the St. Louis Cardinals. A surreal 2023 for the St. Louis Cardinals. They went 71-89 with a Pythagorean record of 71-89, last in the division comfortably. Last year, it felt like every episode that I did a podcast, wow, that didn't make sense. It's been a long day. Every week, couple weeks, every podcast episode I released, I feel like I talked about the Cardinals up until like July, where I was like, oh, is this the month where they put it together? And I feel like we all said that until the season was over and they went 71-91. What the hell happened? Well, pitching, bad. Pitching was very bad. There wasn't much of it, and they were really bad. And they did address that this offseason. They definitely addressed some pitching this offseason. The projection systems, they're not super huge on them, but given the state of this division, they think they're going to win the division. So Pecota gives them 85-77. And Fangraphs thinks they'll go 84-78. Both average about 55% playoff odds, which that is crazy for that low of a win total. But it's the division you play in, man. So I'm looking at this team. I've been looking at this team for days, and I have no idea what to make of it. It's similar-ish to the Cubs, where I'm not a huge believer in this pitching staff. But they signed this offseason. They did sign Sonny Gray, which looks so good right now in this weird pitching market. They signed him to like 3 years, $75 million. Let me just verify that as correct real quick. That's just what I'm pretty sure it was. Super early in the offseason. Yeah, 3 years, $75 million. That is that's great for Sonny Gray. That's great for the Cardinals. It's just a good deal all around. Sonny Gray just has been a really solid pitcher. Had a great year last year. I think he's going to be a good ace for them this year. I really like what he does with his pitches. He's very much like a pitching nerd. I really like listening to him talk about pitching and like his pitch shapes and his strategy and all that. So I think that was a good add. And they signed Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn, and both of those guys can definitely throw innings at the major league level. So that's my analysis of those signings. They just signed Brandon Crawford too, which for Giants fans, that's tough for y'all. That's a tough look. Brandon Crawford in a Cardinals uniform. Oh man. And then they also signed Matt Carpenter, so they're really bringing back some fellas this year to play for this team. And this is the first time in a long time we are looking at a St. Louis Cardinals team without Yadier Molina or Adam Wainwright. They're both gone. Adam Wainwright was one of the worst pitchers I've ever seen last year. Genuinely, I felt bad for him. He should have retired after 2022. He did not. He ran it back and was so bad. He was terrible. It was comical. I think of a specific home run he gave up to Ronald Acuna. I don't know when it was in the year, but it was to lead off the game. It was like the first pitch of the game. Adam Wainwright grooves the 88-mile-an-hour fastball right down the middle, and Acuna just pisses all over it, like 430 left center. That was the epitome of last year for the entire Cardinals team. So their offense looks great this year. I'll just run through it. Brendan Donovan at DH, Paul Goldschmidt at first base, Lars Nootbaar at left field, Nolan Arenado at third base, Wilson Contreras at catcher, Nolan Gorman at second base, Jordan Walker in right field, Tommy Edman in center field, and Mason Winn at shortstop. I don't see a weak position in here at all. Like, maybe Mason Winn at shortstop, offensively, I guess. I don't know. He's one of their top prospects. I think he's going to be really good defensively at shortstop. I don't know about, like, the bat, how it'll play in his rookie year. I think he's more of a hit first. I don't know how much power is in his bat. He can throw the ball. He is, like, he's had highlights of, like, he can throw the ball so hard across the diamond. And I think his glove's going to be fine. I don't love the projections for his offense. I don't think he's going to be particularly good in his full rookie season offensively. But the shortstop position is his to take. Like, they signed Brandon Crawford, I think, literally to be his backup and just teach Mason Winn how to be a big leaguer, particularly at shortstop. And I can't imagine that'll go poorly. I think that'll be great for Mason Winn to have a guy like Brandon Crawford, like, just in your day-to-day. The rest of the lineup is just, I think this is going to be such a good lineup. And they weren't even that bad of a lineup last year. Their pitching was just garbage. Garbage. Like, Brandon Donovan, I think, could have a huge year this year. I think he is healthfully going to be their full-time DH. He will probably play he plays all over. He'll play every position again this year. I think that's a huge part of his value, and he offers a interesting makeup at the plate. I think when I say huge year, I mean huge year in the context of, like, being a utility player, because I think that is more or less what he's going to be. He has really good contact ability, does not strike out very much, and gets on base at a decent clip and plays a lot of positions. Like, that's super valuable to a team with better bats in the lineup, because then you get Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado, who I think are still probably in for some slight regression, but even at this point in their career, some slight regression would still mean solid offensive players. I don't think Nolan Arenado is quite the defender he used to be, but I still think he's a really good defender at third base. The metrics last year for his third base defense were not great, but I feel like he's not a bad defender. I don't think we can call him a bad defender. And he still played a lot last year. He's been so healthy in his entire career. And that's part of the appeal of Nolan Arenado. And Lars Nootbaar and, like, Dylan Carlson and... Dylan Carlson. He's supposed to be the starter in center field. Not Tommy Edman, actually, because Tommy Edman is hurt, and I don't know how much he is actually going to play this year. He had, like, wrist surgery in October last year. I think there's, like, question marks if he'll make the opening day lineup. But if you have Tommy Edman coming back in, like, April, that's perfectly fine. So that's fine there. And then Dylan Carlson, I think, in center is a perfectly serviceable center field. I don't really believe in his bat too much, but what it is. And then Wilson Contreras, you know, just a really good hitting catcher. Good amount of power from the catcher spot. And then Nolan Gorman at second base. And I think he might do a decent amount of DHing this year as well. But he did improve his second base defense last year. So if he makes more improvements there, full-time second base, he could be one of the better second basemen in baseball. I think he has really good power. He had 27 home runs last year. I think he can hit 30 plus this year. Really good raw power. And maybe he's a first baseman. Maybe he's DH. Maybe he's a second baseman. I don't know. But he can thump the ball, and I like that. And then Jordan Walker. Jordan Walker, who was supposed to just come up last year and set the baseball world on fire, and he didn't really do that. He had a solid year at the plate. I think from a rookie in a vacuum, it was a good year. He showed why he was a top prospect with some flashes of the power and the hit tool that he possesses, like true, like, he's a huge guy. He's massive. So there's projectable 40-plus home run power in his career. Maybe not this season, but at some point. Fielding-wise, like, he could be a DH. I don't think he's going to stick in the field at very many places. I feel like they might need to teach him first base or just have him at DH, because played the corner outfields last year, and he was not good. He was really not good. So he needs to make improvements in right field this year for me to really be like, okay, he's the right fielder of the future. But at the plate, I think you're just looking for some improvement, and I feel like he'll suffice. He's still like 22 years old. I'm worried they're going to be a little too reliant on him producing for this team next year. And maybe that'll harm them. But I like this lineup overall. I think it has its highlights, but I think it's just a lineup full of good hitters, like one through seven. Like Mason Wynn, big question mark here from the hit tool. And then Dylan Carlson as well, big question mark from the hit tool. But 1 through 7, good. Good lineup. And then those guys will provide good defense, the other guys who can't hit. So there's that. And then they have Alec Burleson on the bench, another interesting bat who is kind of a corner outfield, DH, first base, similar to a couple other guys on this team who I don't know if he has a position outside of DH. That's an interesting problem for them to have. But he also is a very, like, hit toolsy with decent power, doesn't strike out very much kind of guy. He's interesting, at least coming off the bench. But let's get into the slop. The slop is their rotation. And Sonny Gray's already hurt. So I don't even know if he's going to be the opening day starter, to be honest. He has a strained hamstring. So, like, that could mean he's out for a month, a couple weeks, comes back, hurts it again, is out for 3 months. I don't know. I think there's just big question marks on him being ready for opening day now with the strained hamstring, which is a little alarming for a team that really needs pitching to succeed this year. Because without him, Miles Michaelis, Kyle Gibson, Lance Lynn, Steven Matson, Zach Thompson, PU, that is bad. That is just not good. I'm sorry, Cardinals. I think signing Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn is fine. I think they needed innings, and I think innings they shall have. Same with Miles Michaelis. He's thrown over 200 innings the past 2 years. I don't think this team is going to have as big of an inning problem this year as they did last year. But boy, that's not a good staff. I don't even want to talk about any of those guys. That is ugly. And you get into the bullpen. Ryan Helsley, Giovanni Gallegos, JoJo Romero, Andrew Kittredge, Kanan Middleton. I think Ryan Helsley is the clear, like, he's the closer, and then Giovanni Gallegos is your late-inning guy, and JoJo Romero is your late-inning guy who's a lefty, so you have a good lefty guy in there. I like Ryan Helsley. I mean, past 2 years, he's been one of the better relievers in baseball. I don't think there's any reason to doubt him this year. If he can just be healthy for more of the year. He only pitched 36 innings last year compared to 64 in 2022. So the key to him is just kind of staying healthy. Otherwise, I think he'll be good and a good closer for them again if they can be winning games by the end of the game for him to close. And then Giovanni Gallegos. I'm a little worried about him. He's had a really good career with the Cardinals since he's been on their team through like 5-6 years now. And I think last year was alarming, very alarming to me. He lost a couple ticks on his fastball. He wasn't striking guys out as much. He gave up a lot more home runs. I think he got a little unlucky in the home run department. But I don't think I think there is reason to believe he's started his decline as a relief pitcher, and I don't think that's the best thing for this team right now. Who were just like Kanan Middleton, Andrew Kittredge, I guess, are like okay in this bullpen. Like I do like JoJo Romero as the lefty in this pen. He had a very solid sample last year. Really good. Really looked nice. His peripherals were sexy compared to his like raw ERA. So I feel like he might take up the mantle of a clear setup guy from Gallegos this year. But I don't know, man. I don't know. They have Tink Hentz in the minors. One of their, I think is their top prospect right now. Pitching wise, he's just like really nasty stuff with like command wise, I don't know where he's at, but he's only in double A. And then other arms for depth, Matthew Liberatore, I think we'll see a fair amount of him this year. I don't think he's bad, but I don't see like a tremendous amount of upside. Like, I feel like he's best case your fourth starter. And then they have a couple other, like Adam Klopfenstein. Gordon Graceffo. I think they have other pitching options. I just don't necessarily know if I believe in those other pitching options. So this is an interesting team. I feel like I'm lower on this team than the projections say. I like the lineup to be good again, but I think the innings from this pitching staff are going to be important, and I just don't think this pitching staff is particularly good. The pitching in this division is not going to be, especially if Sonny Gray. If Sonny Gray isn't on the opening day lineup and misses like a month of time, that could bury this pitching staff for the year. That'd be so bad for them. The pitching in this division is going to be bad. The offenses are all honestly kind of fun. The pitching is going to be garbage, which is why I think this is a knife fight. All of these teams have a knife. They all have young, fun players offensively. They all are going to give up a lot of runs and just like take a lot of shanks to the stomach through giving up a lot of home runs in their pitching staff. But what's going to propel any of these teams to win this division this year is being solid to okay pitching-wise. Like, I think Sonny Gray is absolutely the X factor of this Cardinals team, because especially now that he's potentially hurt for opening day, they need him to be an ace. They need him to put up at least close to what he did last year. He had like a 5-WAR season last year. They need him to be close to that if they want to really be competitive this year. So that's that for the Cardinals. What is their over-under? And I can try to give my official standings prediction. Their over-under is also 84.5, much like the Cubs. Oh, man. Ah, geez. 84.5 for this Cardinals team? Ah, shnikes, man. I don't even know. I don't even know what to do here. I'll be honest with you. I'm going to pause and come back and give you my thoughts. All right, I've decided what I'm doing. I'm revising my over and under pick for the Cubs. I'm going to go over 84.5 for this Cubs team. I think what pushes them over is this division is not very good. And I'm going to go under. I'm going to give the Cardinals under 84.5. And then standings-wise, I still don't really know what to do. All right, here it is. Here are the standings. The Pittsburgh Pirates are taking fifth place. The St. Louis Cardinals are going to get fourth. The Brewers in third. The Cubs in second. And yes, the Cincinnati Reds will win the NL Central division. You heard it here first. I think things go great for the Reds. I think Nick Lodolo comes back and looks good and pitches healthily all year. I think Hunter Green throws 170 innings of 3.95 ERA baseball. I think Matt McClain continues to be one of the best players in the National League. I think Ellie De La Cruz does cool things this year. I don't know. I just like it. I like the Reds. I don't know what to do with this division. Reds, Cubs, Brewers, Cardinals, Pirates. That's it. That's the NL Central. Thank you for listening. This has been the NL Central preview. The next preview I will be doing is the NL West, and then my final divisional preview is the AL East, because I'm just waiting for someone in that division to sign Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell, man. But thank you for listening this far. I much appreciate it. These are longer episodes. I got fun doing them. I hope you have fun listening to them. But look out for that NL West preview. It should be, I'm shooting for Monday, this following Monday, and this one will come out on Friday. So look out for that one, and hope you have a good weekend if you're listening to this on Friday. And if you disagree with my picks, holler at me, because this division I think is impossible to predict. So if I get it right, I don't know what I'm going to do if I got that prediction right. I doubt I did, but I will sign off now. Have a good next couple days until the NL West preview, and I'll leave it at that.